In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have a whole bunch of Bears news, including free agency start. We've got Cubs and White Sox and Bulls and Blackhawks. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is going on right now, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com. Get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swarski Sports sent you. Alex, my friend, how are you doing today?
I am doing fine, and yourself?
I'm doing well, doing well. I'm enjoying day one of the legal tampering period of the NFL free agency period.
It's one of my favorite days of the year because unlike baseball and the other sports, that day one comes and it's just like, boom, look at all these signings. Obviously, you know, you have that kind of with basketball too, but there's something about the NFL. It's just on a whole other level.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny. So if you're a new NFL fan or you didn't follow this closely, a few years ago, they implemented the legal tampering period. It was a couple-day period before the official start of free agency. So when you can start signing deals. And they don't become official until the league new year opens up on Wednesday afternoon. But prior to that, like the minute the clock struck midnight on the start of the league new year, like you would have these like $150 million deals just woof, like within 2 seconds of the league year starting. You're like, oh yeah, okay. How did this magically come about? So the league was like, oh, well, we're going to end that by having this legal tampering period. But really, the teams are just talking earlier than that because, I mean, the Bears had their first deal, what, a couple minutes after they were allowed to? So you can't tell me that you're able to negotiate a multi-year, multi-million dollar deal in 8 minutes.
Oh, come on now. Don't underestimate Ryan Poles. He gets there, sits down, does it all right then and there. He's like when he writes down on paper, it's like, it's blurs. He writes so fast and the ink turns into fire as he's writing so quickly in the friction. But no, seriously, you are right. And I think that when you look at this coming off season, you knew that this was going to be one of the more interesting off seasons. And day one, boy, you had some deals that really shape the future of the market that heavily impacts the Bears at a certain important position. And there were some deals too, where you say, wow, you know, you look at the money that, I mean, you know, you can always say that free agents are overpaid, but I think there's a degree which some were overpaid and some were given pretty fair deals. And man, I think that we're going to get into the Bears, but the deal they made today, I think compared to a lot of the others, looks fairly friendly because like you said, that came right away. The deal the Bears made today came right away. And then afterwards, you see all these other deals that are coming in. You're like, holy crap with some of these. And you're thinking, okay, for the value of this position and who he is, I think the Bears got a solid deal with this one.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing that jumped out to me, and after last offseason, I think everyone was pretty much under the impression, hey, you know, why are we going to pay a running back?
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to draft them. And you know, we'll, the plan seemed to be that you pay them the 4 year scale and then you tag them for that last year. So you get 5 years for, you know, not that much money. And then you draft somebody else. So you get the 5 years out of players. And I think everybody thought this was going to be the new norm. And you get into this year, and right off the bat, the Bears give a deal to DeAndre Swift. And as a Swiftie, you know, I'm going to break my rule of I'm not buying a Bears jersey of a current active player again because I'm going to get a Bears Swift jersey.
Oh, no. No. Oh, my goodness. If his Achilles ruptures in week one of preseason, I will come to your house and I will spit all over your food.
No, it won't work like that because it won't be a DeAndre Swift jersey. It'll be a T-Swift jersey that secretly...
I don't care. I don't care. It's indication of the player on the roster.
But the Bears right off the bat gave a contract to DeAndre Swift. And I think a lot of Bears fans were like, what the hell? Why are the Bears paying this guy, you know, fairly significant money, a 3-year, $24 million contract with, I believe, $15 million guaranteed? And they're like, what are the Bears doing? And then the carousel of running backs just went, and it ends up looking like not a bad deal.
No, and you remember, too, is that we've been talking about, and many people have been talking about, the prospect of Saquon Barkley. And Saquon Barkley, it's funny. I was talking to coworkers. I'm like, how crazy would it be if he went to the Eagles? Sure enough, where did Saquon Barkley go? He went to the Eagles. And you look at the money he's making versus what DeAndre Swift is making. Listen, I think Saquon Barkley is obviously a better running back when healthy than DeAndre Swift, but I'd rather pay a running back of this caliber this money. I mean, when I've said no to Barkley, no, I wanted him, but you look at the money he's getting and, you know, it's significantly more.
Yeah, I was, you know, naive about this apparently because I walked into this going, you know what? I like the idea of Saquon Barkley, but the contract that I had in my head was the contract, pretty much the contract that DeAndre Swift got.
Right.
So I thought that would be in the ballpark of enough, and apparently not.
Right, exactly. And I think when you look at the situation too for the Bears, this is kind of how I look at it. You look at the running backs. Okay, you know, you had last year, you had Deontay Foreman, you had Khalil Herbert, you had Roschon Johnson. That was your main running attack. You know, you had Travis Homer in there as kind of a last guy, a blocker, but really your big backs were those three. And Khalil Herbert, a guy who I like, after that injury, he never really looked quite the same. Wouldn't you agree? Like that kind of that burst through the hole just wasn't quite there. It's like he was a step slower.
At the very end, you started to see him rebound.
Yes, you did.
The problem with Khalil Herbert is he is not an exceptional pass blocker.
No.
And he's not the best receiver as a running back.
No, and that's the other point I wanted to make too, is that you're getting that threat of being a guy you can throw to in Swift.
Yes. He is going to give you that. He'll be by far the fastest of the running backs on the Bears, barring them drafting somebody. But
right.
assuming that this is the roster they're going in, I'm gonna guess that they'll probably bring in a couple of undrafted free agents or late round players. But assuming this is the running back room, he's far and away the fastest of the backs, far and away the best receiver of the backs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's going to get the, you know, Derrick Henry load of carries. I think they're going to play this out, but it gives you that ability to have a big play and the ability to add a player in the receiving. So I like this, and you know, it's more than I expected them or kind of wanted them to pay for a running back, but based on, I mean, the running back rooms changes so far. Saquon Barkley to the Eagles, Josh Jacobs to the Packers, Austin Eckler to the Commanders, Tony Pollard to the Titans, Devin Singletary to the Giants, Gus Edwards to the Chargers, Antonio Gibson to the Patriots. Like, that is a lot of guys that moved really quickly.
Really quickly, yeah. Absolutely. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, with a move like this, is when you get a guy like Swift, who's coming off a career year, he's coming off a career year in starts, in yards, rushing yards. It was his first ever 1,000-plus yard season because, you know, he's had some injury issues in the past, and he wasn't as much of a starter early on in Detroit. He started four games in 2020, four games in 2021. They had a pretty deep running attack. He played in 13 games each of those seasons and then played 14 in 2022. So, yes, he's missed some time to injury, but it's not like he's missed a crap ton of time. And you hope that after getting this payday, he'll continue the production he had last year in Philly. Obviously, in Philly, too, you were playing on a contending team with a very good coach. You know, Jalen Hurts was your running back, so it was a good fit for him there. But, you know, you can look at this here and say, okay, you brought in Shane Waldron, and you kind of look at the running back core that you have. Like you said, with Khalil Herbert, not really a threat to be a quick receiver or a pass blocker. And, you know, Roschon Johnson kind of feels more like that power guy, the guy who's going to kind of bounce and push forward, where here you got a little bit of that speed. So there's adding a little bit of the balance to it. I think that with this move, the Bears at least can say, okay, we can have a bit more of a balanced run game attack, and you have an experienced guy. And he, you know, it's funny. When I thought DeAndre Swift right off the bat, I automatically thought, I'm like, oh, what? He's like 27, 28. He's only 25. It feels like he's been in the league a lot longer than he has. He's been in the league since 2020, but he is only 25. So
yeah, he came you're in not, young.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going out and getting a guy in his late 20s. I mean, that's really old for a running back, but where you're getting him now, it's kind of nice because yes, he's, you know, he's got some miles on him, but you figure a 3-year deal, assuming everything goes well, you're probably getting the last of his prime years. Again, assuming everything goes well, we know players can drop off like a rock, but, you know, optimistically, I think you're getting him at a solid time.
You know, I've seen a lot of people say, well, if you're going to pay him this much money, why didn't you keep David Montgomery? And a couple reasons, a couple things here. One, the Bears did make a contract offer to David Montgomery. I don't think we ever knew the details, so I don't know how it compared with the Lions offer, but he ultimately chose going to the Lions because he was an unrestricted free agent. And two, you're bringing in a guy with a different skill set. He's much more of a shifty back and a speed guy and a receiving threat. You know, if you look at the stats last year, he had more rushing yards. I mean, well, David Montgomery, they signed him to that deal in Detroit and then went out and drafted a first round running back. Number one. Number two is David Montgomery and behind one of the best offensive lines in football ran for less yards and the same average as DeAndre Swift did in a really down year in Philadelphia. DeAndre Swift had more than twice as many receptions than David Montgomery. Plus, he's a year younger. So I think this worked out more towards what the Bears are trying to do. I like David Montgomery, and I'm not going to shit on him, but he's, you know, his niche is he takes that hit and then gets yards after contact. That is the opposite of what DeAndre Swift is.
Right.
But one other thing to consider is DeAndre Swift in his NFL career has 593 carries. David Montgomery has 1,134. There's a lot more tread on DeAndre Swift's tires than on David Montgomery's.
Yeah, and, you know, I also think, too, it's a matter of timing. I mean, like last year, when the Bears were still kind of in this transition phase, so to speak, it kind of feels like it makes more sense now to sign a running back like this to a contract, but maybe not as much then. I mean, you can make an argue there for against, but I feel like timing has something to do with this. And I think that jumping on a guy like DeAndre Swift when you do have that threat of him being a receiver. You know, what have we talked about? Whoever the quarterback's going to be next year, whether it's Justin, Caleb Williams, or whoever, you know, you try to get him as many weapons as possible. And obviously a ground game is a weapon, but that's a potentially another target right there. So I do think that makes sense for what they're trying to do.
Oh, I would agree with that. You know, they're in a much different spot than they were a year ago at this time.
Right.
And signing a running back of, you know, is DeAndre Swift in that Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs echelon? Probably not, but he's that second tier, and this is a move of a team that is definitely planning to win more than 7 games this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, obviously. And, you know, you're bringing in a guy who was on Philly last year. Like I said, they were contenders and, you know, played for a good coach. And I think that hopefully, as long as he's healthy, playing to where he is, I think that it's a nice veteran piece to have in that position, because now you have multiple running backs like last year where they had previous experience. I mean, Khalil Herbert didn't have much, but he had some. And yet Deontay Foreman was kind of your veteran guy. Now you have another year under Khalil Herbert's belt and a 4-year vet in DeAndre Swift that comes from a very successful team in Philadelphia. So I think that's kind of a nice get too. You know, Roschon Johnson will be his sophomore year. We'll kind of see how they use him, but I feel like right now you look at the running back core, your one is probably Swift, 2, Herbert, 3, Johnson. It's kind of how I see it.
Yeah. So there's going to be lots of split carries in this year. There's going to be no workhorse back. And I think that's going to work in the Bears' favor.
Right. Right.
And I believe this is the last year of Khalil Herbert's rookie deal. And the drafting of Roschon Johnson and the signing of DeAndre Swift kind of signaled to me that Khalil Herbert is also in his last year with the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. And, you know, I like Khalil Herbert, but that's a player that's pretty replaceable. I mean, just being completely honest there. And, you know, I've said David Montgomery is replaceable in the past, and I'll still somewhat stick by that. I think he's in a really good spot in Detroit, a great system, a great line. He thrives there because he gets the extra protection. And then, you know, when he kind of bursts through the hole, he's able to bounce off defenders. And he had plenty of wide open holes with that Lions offensive line. So I think it worked really well there. But, you know, going forward here with the Bears, you have a guy that's, you know, again, he was a Pro Bowler last year. It was his first Pro Bowl. I think he's an above average back when healthy, when playing. But I think you can also look and say, hey, this is just kind of your guy to help balance your attack. He's like you said, it's not going to be lopsided in terms of carries. It's more balancing. You know, he's not going to be Derrick Henry. He's not going to be Saquon Barkley. There's an understanding of what this scheme is trying to be.
Right. Let's see. What else do we, the Bears? Oh, we haven't talked since the tag deadline. And the tag deadline, we talked about, you know, if the Bears didn't come to a long-term deal with Jalen Johnson, that look for them to tag him to give them some more time. And lo and behold, that's what happened. And in short order, they get the deal done. So they must have been pretty close on things.
There was a lot of smoke about that deal being close.
Yeah. And so I think the deal worked out for both sides. I still think had Ryan Poles done this deal last off season, it would have been a little bit more favorable to the Bears, but Ryan Poles cost himself a little bit by getting a little more assurance that Jalen was ready to take that step, next step, which he did. And the deal doesn't make Jalen Johnson the highest paid cornerback, but it does give him a pretty good guarantee, like a good percent of his contract is guaranteed. So I think this ends up being good for both sides.
Yeah, and I think that that deal, you look at the overall structure and you say, okay, if you're going to look at the yearly cash and you look at the franchise tag, what he would have made through the franchise tag, the first year, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's any reason to really fret over the money because, you know, you were going to be paying a decent amount of money no matter what, whether it was an extension or the franchise tag. The important thing was retaining him, and you got plenty of money. So, you know, now you know he's going to be here the next several years, and you feel better about the structure of your secondary knowing that he's going to be a part of it. Because if you lost Roschon Johnson, that's a big hole to fill.
Jalen Johnson.
Did I say Roschon? My goodness.
Yeah.
Roschon, Jalen. But my point still stands.
Yeah, this defense is significantly different with and without him. And I'm not saying that you couldn't have a good defense without him. You would just need a lot of guys to take that step up. And I think Tyrique Stevenson has shown that he's on that track. And Kyler Gordon played really well this year, and you need him to be healthy and play that well. And Terrell Smith would have to take that next step up and play be healthy the whole season in order to kind of fill those shoes. But you bring him back and it gives you a lot of flexibility. So you already know you have a stud, and then everybody else can just fill in their gaps. And, you know, honestly, the Bears have arguably one of the best secondaries in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, with Jalen Johnson, if he would have left, I mean, obviously you can draft somebody, but if you were trying to solve that in-house, you know, you have some pieces that are okay, they're solid, but to step up to Jalen Johnson's level, that's a big ask.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge ask.
And I think that there's relief on both sides, really on all sides, the fan side, Jalen Johnson's side, and the Bears side, because Ryan Poles clearly wanted to get this done. Jalen Johnson wanted to be here, and the Bears fans wanted Jalen Johnson here. I think that it says a lot that he's here under an extension. Remember, Jalen Johnson was drafted by Ryan Pace, not Ryan Poles. Most of Ryan Pace's Bears are gone. I know it's the NFL and windows for many players are not very long, but consider all the guys that Ryan Pace traded away, released, didn't re-sign from that era. There's Jalen Johnson that's still part of the equation and is now going to be here for some time. So he's done that now with Jalen Johnson and Cole Kmet, two Ryan Pace guys that he's extended.
Right. Let's see. So then they also, we already knew that Whitey Cotehair and Eddie Jackson were released, and there was a big void in that safety spot that Eddie Jackson vacated. And that was a concern of mine because I didn't know how this free agent class would play out. And I was not that impressed by the rookie class and the fact that you don't have a lot of draft picks. It worried me a little bit, and they end up making a move and signing Kevin Byard, who was released by the Eagles. Or is a free agent? No, he's released. And they signed him into a 2-year deal for $15 million, which is less than half of what Eddie Jackson was slated to make, I believe.
Right. And that's the whole thing. I mean, right there is you're getting a durable name that will cost less than Eddie Jackson.
Yeah. And if you look at the advanced stats, he is fair. Like he's a decent amount better as a, in coverage, and he's significantly better as a tackler. Like if you look at missed tackle percentage, it's like a third of what Eddie Jackson was. So he's a much more sure tackler. Which that was an Achilles heel for the Bears is Eddie yes. Jackson's poor tackling. That was a nice signing, and it's 2 years. And I know he's 30 years old and he's gonna hit some sort of wall at some point, but I think this really just buys you time because when you look, you're like, oh, he wants to build through the draft. That is all fine and good. But you're at a point now where you need to just add talent. And it takes to add talent from nothing to the talent that you need to be competitive. It takes a while. You've got to add smartly in free agency, whether that be a player like Montez Sweat, who's in his prime, and you sign him to a nice deal where it keeps him through his entire prime. Or a short-term deal like Kevin Byard, where you're like, okay, well, he's older, but this is not locking us into anything. Is we sign him, and if he plays well, awesome. We could get by a kick it even down the road, the need to draft a safety another year down the road. Or you can take a flyer on a late-round prospect and then gradually see how they fit into things and groom them into the position rather than having to draft somebody high and then expect them to come in day one and play. So it gives you that little bit of flexibility. I don't know how it's going to pan out. None of these players that were signed today, you know, are going to pan out, but it's the logic behind the move. And I think Byard is a decent enough player. He's a pretty sizable step up from where you were with Eddie Jackson of last year. Is he as good as Eddie Jackson's best? No, but Eddie Jackson has not been consistently at his best in a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Eddie Jackson's peak was really 2017, 2018, 2019, and he had a good 2022 as well before he got hurt, but you know, we've seen the injury issues over the past 2 years, and we've seen him just not in the right position, not tackling well, like you said. And we knew the end of the Eddie Jackson era was coming to an end very, very quickly. When he was cut, there wasn't a single surprise. I think we all knew last year that Eddie Jackson had played his last snaps as a Bear. So bringing in an experienced guy with a good resume at, you know, a fraction of the price. I mean, it's good to fill in a hole with something like that. And, you know, I'm not going to say he's going to be great for the Bears, but if he's sufficient enough, then you can live with it as long as the secondary as a whole is playing well, the defense as a whole is playing well, and he stays on the field, then, you know, he goes out there and he does the job that he's asked to do.
Yeah. And then one last move is they made a trade for a player that the Bears tried to sign a couple years ago. And when Poles, his first free agency, was Ryan Bates. And the weird thing is I know a lot of people are like, I can't believe they gave up fifth round for Ryan Bates. But those same people, when the Bears didn't get him 2 years ago, that the Bills matched the contract as a restricted free agent and got to keep him, they were like, oh my God, the Bears swung and missed. This is bad look on Ryan Poles that you didn't get your guy. You can't have it both ways. They got their guy, and I don't know where Ryan Bates is going to fit in. You know, you're hearing he's a guy that could just be a really strong backup that can play both guards and the center position, which is needed, especially for considering that, you don't have a starting center, and both guards missed a bunch of time last year with injuries and other various things. So you're like, okay, you really need that. And then other people are saying this really could be your starting center. That's what Ryan Poles liked him as. I'm curious to see how this is going to work out.
As am I.
But the contract you have him on, it's
I don't want to shit on it, but I also don't want to call it genius just yet. I'm trying not to make too much out of it at this point. And I will say, even with the Bears' recent success in the fifth round, overall, the fifth round of the NFL draft can be a real crapshoot. It's really a lottery ticket when you get into those later rounds. So if you end up getting a serviceable to good offensive lineman at a position you need, at the use of a fifth rounder, I think you can live with that. But again, there's going to be some wait and see with this deal.
Yeah. And, you know, the way I look at it is this, because a lot of underclassmen didn't declare this year, the draft is not going to be that deep. It's kind of front loaded. So I think people are going to be willing to wheel and deal later round picks because they're not expecting them to be. And you're right, they are crapshoots. I think this year might be a little bit more of a crapshoot because, you know, at least when you include more underclassmen, some of them are, you know, much, much higher prospects, and that pushes better prospects down. Or you have younger players who came out a little early and they're taking the draft hit from that. And so you can get some guys with higher upside, but maybe lower floors later in the draft. But it is really a crapshoot. So you go with a fifth round pick and you get a guy whose base salary this year and next year is going to be $3.4 million. So if he ends up being a starter and plays at least a average level, that's a big win. If he ends up being a serviceable backup, I still think that's a win. You know, you don't lock up big money. As long as he's available and isn't a complete bust, I'm not mad at this move. If he ends up being Lucas Patrick too, I'm going to be annoyed.
Then it's bad. Right. Then it's bad.
As long as he's available and can, you know, play at
service. Handle his own. Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I agree.
But, you know, looking where the draft is right now, I mean, the free agency is right now, the Bears have, I'm on Over the Cap, and our buddy Brad Spielberger has not updated yet to add Kevin Byard. He's added the other contracts, but the Bears are about $50 million to spend in free agency and the draft still. So they've got a bunch of money still left.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm, you have a edge rusher position that you still need to fill. You have probably two wide receiver spots to fill. You've got a U tight end position to fill. And I don't know yet what you're doing at center. So the centers in free agencies, the big name ones, Brewer and Cushenberry, were already signed. Mm-hmm. And they signed to pretty significant money.
Yeah.
So that makes me think that either the Bears are planning to use a draft pick on one, or they feel comfortable with Ryan Bates and Doug Kramer going in competing for that spot. And the thing about Doug Kramer is I like the tape of him, and obviously the Cardinals thought high enough of him to take him off the Bears practice squad last year and sign him to their active roster. He played the whole season on the active roster, or most of the season, and then the Bears brought him back and signed him to a futures deal. But I don't know what he. I've never watched him play. He missed a whole season because of injury, and then last year he got snatched away. So I don't know what you're getting in him. And Ryan Bates is a guy that's been a backup, like a very well-regarded backup, but a backup.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to be enough to cut it. And I think that, you get that sense that Ryan Poles has a line to draw when it comes to spending, even with all the cap space. So, like you said, those other linemen who went in free agency, they got paid. And you look at some of the money they make, and you really just probably think Ryan Poles didn't want to pay that. I mean, doesn't that seem kind of like a conclusion you can draw?
Yeah, I mean, here's where you are is Connor Williams. It was the top free agent center, but he tore his ACL in week 17. So who knows when he's gonna be back for the start of the season. Now maybe that's a guy. I'm going to throw the speculation. This is 100% speculation. Maybe Ryan Poles feels comfortable enough with Bates and Doug Kramer going into the season, knowing that he would like to sign Connor Williams to a deal, even if it's a prove it deal, coming off that injury and knowing that he'll be back at some point. And step in. So Bates and Doug Kramer would just have to hold the fort down. I think
Risky.
that's a big risky thing, especially considering the fact that either you're drafting a rookie, high valued rookie quarterback, or you're sticking with your other quarterback that you've had for the last couple seasons that you're trying to make sure that this works. So I think that's a risky play, but I'm just throwing that out there. Andre James was, I'm going by PFF's ranks of the free agent centers. The second highest ranked one is Andre James, and he re-signed with the Raiders. Lloyd Cushenberry was the third one, and he signed with the Titans. Aaron Brewer was the fourth one, and he I think he signed. I just saw he signed with somebody right before we came on. So Brewer is gone. Tyler Biadasz signed with the Commanders. Coleman Shelton was the sixth. I think he's still available.
The Dolphins were the ones who signed Brewer, by the way.
Okay. I thought I saw him sign. I was sure I saw him sign somewhere. Yeah, so you're running out of the centers. Let's see. Mitch Moore signed. So you've got Evan Brown, I think, is still available. He came from Seattle, so maybe that's a guy that Shane Waldron feels comfortable with. And maybe he's a later signing, like one of those second wave of free agency signings after the dust settles.
And there'll be plenty of those.
There
A
will
lot of
be.
guys went today, but that doesn't mean it's the end of everything at
Yeah,
any position.
I mean, Justin Jones was one of those guys, and he just signed another deal with the Cardinals for 3 years over $30 million.
Yep.
So there's, there's still plenty of guys to sign. You know, just because you don't sign a guy in this first day of free agency, it's not even the first 24 hours. We're like the first, we're not even in the first 12 hours of free agency. So this is I'm not going to call it a long game because we see what the baseball free agency period looks like.
But that's a long game.
Yeah. This is not a sprint. There's plenty of players available.
Yeah. And you could be listening to this podcast and the Bears will have already made another big move or two.
Yeah. And that's very likely. Very likely. So it's, there's a lot of moves left to be made.
Absolutely. There is we do probably have to get to one of the elephants in the room, right?
I just want to mention quickly first. So the free agents that were available, Brian Burns got traded today, which Carolina is a dumb team. They had DJ Moore. They had what's his name? The running back from the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey. They had Brian Burns. And they traded them all away before they were 26 years old.
But you know what? Maybe their first overall pick this year will help them get back into The other day was the anniversary. It was either Saturday or Sunday. It was the anniversary of the Ryan Poles trade. I think it was Sunday. Yeah, it was the anniversary of the Ryan Poles trade with Carolina, where literally every star for the Bears aligned. The stars aligned for the Bears to get that first overall pick to trade, and the stars aligned for the Bears to get the first overall pick again from the Carolina Panthers. Truly incredible.
Yeah. But edge rushers are starting to go. This one's a little worrisome, but I'll get to that in a second. Is Brian Burns was traded and signed a huge contract. 5-year, $150 million. Josh Allen got tagged by Jaguars. Bryce Huff signed with the Eagles. Za'Darius Smith signed an extension with the Browns. Jonathan Greenard signed a big contract with the Vikings to replace Danielle Hunter, who's still a free agent. Leonard Floyd signed a decent contract with the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Van Ginkle signed a contract with the Vikings. Dorrance Armstrong signed with the Commanders. Marcus Davenport signed with the Lions. Brandon Graham signed an extension with the Eagles. Tyquan Lewis signed an extension with the Colts. LJ Collier signed an extension with the Cardinals. So you're starting to run out of free agents. Danielle Hunter is a name. I think you probably are passing on Chase Young.
Yeah.
Jadeveon Clowney is an interesting name. I think you probably pass on Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gross Matos, I believe, signed somewhere. So you really, there's, if you are not in on, like Clowney or Randy Gregory or Danielle Hunter, like you might be out of luck. But honestly, I don't know if I see Ryan Poles paying big money for two edge rushers. I think they're going to, I don't know how they swing this, but I think you've got to go for one of those big three in the first round of edge rushers. Dallas Turner, Latu, or the guy from Florida State, Verse. I think you've got to get one of those three guys to pair. But it also leaves you with you need two wide receivers. And I think you probably sign a three and draft a two.
Yep. I mean, that makes the most sense. Because you know, you're probably not going to be paying a crap ton overpay for a free agent wide receiver in this free agent class.
Yeah, I mean, T. Higgins is available via trade, but
I don't see them doing that.
because you have to pay him and trade for him.
Exactly.
I don't see that.
As much as I would love T. Higgins on the Bears, it just, I don't see it.
Yeah. Mike Evans signed an extension. Michael Pittman signed an extension. Gabe Davis signed. So you got Calvin Ridley, who he had a really meh year last year. You got Marquise Brown, Darnell Mooney, Tyler Boyd, Odell Beckham, Devontae Parker, old ass Julio Jones,
No.
Stonehands Mecole Hardman, Stonehands Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
You think
Two more?
they could get Calvin Ridley at a decent price?
No, but I don't know. I mean, it just sees how let's see how the league kind of views him. Chase Claypool's available.
Oh, totally. Let's do that. That sounds like a great idea. That won't be bad at all.
Yeah, so I think you need to walk out of this draft with a high. You got to figure out a way to get a second round pick, because you use that first or that second of your first rounders on an edge rusher, and you use the second round pick on a wide receiver. I think that's the play you got to make.
Assuming you're not trading the first overall pick.
I don't know. I don't know what to. I honestly don't know what to think.
I don't either. Because that's where, obviously we're going to go.
Yeah.
Because a lot happened today that really dictated where this market has ended up.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, because we've talked about the teams that, like, oh, this makes sense to for Justin Fields to wind up, and we've never fully established that the Bears are not going to keep Justin Fields.
Right.
I know that's kind of the narrative. We don't know. We have no idea. We've heard the rumors that in the Bears front office that there are camps that want to keep him, and there are camps that want to draft somebody. And you've heard Kevin Warren publicly talk about how much he loves Justin Fields. And then you hear today, though, then during the combine, during an interview, Ryan Poles said that if they do decide to move on from Justin Fields, they want to do right by him and move him early. And then you have the report today that the Bears haven't attempted to trade him yet.
Right. And I do think that a lot of this market was dictated by where Kirk Cousins ended up. And guess what? The Falcons just paid him a shit ton of money.
That guy should have a Hall of Fame plaque in the Finesse Hall of Fame, because he has earned almost a $500 million for one playoff win.
Cha-ching, cha-ching.
People want to shit on Justin Fields, but he can't win the big game. That this dude has made oh by the when it's all said and done, a $500 million for being the most basic ass mediocre quarterback. Like, sure, he puts up some nice stats, but he can't win the games.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are pretty damn good. Like, you have to admit, the numbers are pretty damn
Oh,
good,
yeah.
but the playoffs, what you said, one playoff run, right? I think that was against New Orleans in 2019, but yeah.
You, the guy, I mean, look what his primetime record is. That guy is a Sunday at noon quarterback.
Oh, Sunday at noon, he is like one of the best Sunday at noon quarterbacks ever. I mean, he's putting up 350 plus yards, three touchdown passes. And I mean, listen, I thought that a few weeks ago. It felt sure that he was going back to the Vikings. Then all of a sudden you hear these rumblings, and then you hear rumblings about Justin Fields. Well, if Kirk Cousins doesn't go back to the Vikings, could the Bears make a deal with them? And let me just say right now that if you're going to make a trade with the Minnesota Vikings, you better be getting, you can't just sell Justin Fields to get what you can and return to a division rival. You might be able to do that with a few other teams, but if you're trading him into Minnesota, you better not just be settling for like a fourth round pick or a third round pick, because that means a whole lot more. You know, Absolutely. There's a difference between trading him to the Vikings versus trading him to the Falcons or the Steelers. And now the Falcons are off the board with Kirk Cousins, and the Steelers are off the board with Russell Wilson. And then, as you and I suspected, it's pretty much everybody suspected, they're bringing back Baker Mayfield down in Tampa. I don't think there is a single person surprised by that.
No. I mean, he got a bag, 3-year, $100 million contract. Kirk Cousins they gave a 36-year-old quarterback coming off of an Achilles tear 4 years, $180 million with $100 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Atlanta is going all in because this is essentially a 2-year window here.
Right. And really, you looked at the Atlanta Falcons last year, you're like, okay, they're just kind of a head coach and a quarterback away from being something, because they had plenty on the supporting cast, but you weren't winning any meaningful games with Arthur Smith and Tyler Heinicke leading the way. But you saw the talent throughout that team. You're like, okay, you get him a solid quarterback, you get him a better calling head coach, and then you can make things, especially in a division that's so bad.
And Arthur Smith's a weird one because he was a pretty good offensive coordinator. And then you're like, oh, we'll put him as a head coach with weapons. And just like, you wonder how much of that he was handcuffed by having terrible quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know what? Some people just are coordinator strictly materials. Many coordinators out there just aren't head coach material. Sure.
Russell Wilson went to the Steelers on a 1-year deal, and Baker re-signed with the Bucks. The Raiders signed Gardner Minshew.
That was one of the destinations people talked about for Fields.
And you know, I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, well, you know, Luke Getsy's the offensive coordinator. He's not going to want to bring Justin back." Do you think Mark Davis gives a shit what Luke Getsy has to think about anything?
I was going to say, if you're talking logic or being normals, the Raiders are not one of those teams you do so.
No. Here's the one thing. I have no idea what the Raiders are going to do. I don't think the Raiders know what the Raiders are going to do. No. But the one thing I can tell you is it was his dad did it. Now Mark Davis does it. They fall in love with a guy with absolutely amazing athletic ability, and they can't look past it. And of the quarterbacks that are available, who has the most athletic ability?
Are you talking on the trade and free agent market?
Yes.
Justin Fields.
It is Justin Fields. So I'm not throwing that out. And, you know, Gardner Minshew, 2-year, $25 million. That is the best backup money in the NFL for the best backup quarterback in the NFL. So it does not preclude you from going after Justin Fields. I'm just saying that. Does that mean he's going to go there? It doesn't mean anything. Just saying that it's not like Baker Mayfield signing 3-year, $100 million. That stops you from going after Justin Fields.
Does Kirk Cousins, as does Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson just out of that name, but the money does not for Russell Wilson. But the fact, I don't think he signs unless Pittsburgh gives him the guarantee that it's his job to lose.
I was going to say, he's the starting quarterback. It is more than obvious he's the starting quarterback. But you are right about the Raiders, is that Gardner Minshew, he's kind of that good backup slat. He's almost like a swing starter in baseball where feel decent about putting him at the position.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly the way you put it. Exactly.
He's a really good backup / really good bridge guy slash, like, he's a good teammate. Like, he's a chill dude. Like, the dude most, like, the off season lives in a van. Like, he's a
down
chill
by
dude.
The river.
Yeah, he's a chill dude.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it doesn't take them completely out of it. It felt like the chances of him going there were much higher before they signed Gardner Minshew.
Yes, I will give you that. I'm just saying that Justin Fields' $6 million that he's going to make next year does not stop them from bringing him in.
No, financially, no. And then you look at some of the other teams. Obviously, you look at the Patriots. They just traded away Mac Jones for packing peanuts. I'm surprised they got that much. But I think they're probably going to draft a guy as same as the Commanders.
Patriots just re-signed Jacoby Brissett.
Right.
Which tells me that they are drafting somebody.
Yes, correct.
That's that. I looked at that as a wild card for Justin Fields if the Bears do trade him. Because you're like, okay, well, what if the Patriots, because the Patriots are a terrible team. Like, yes. they are bad. And they need a lot of help. Like, they don't have any difference makers on that team. So I was like, what if they decided to either move back from their number three spot to one of those teams like the Vikings who need a quarterback and they're kind of far back to get one of the top guys, trade back, get a bunch of draft capital, and then trade for a Justin Fields where he's kind of a bridge guy, but potentially could be like he's could potentially be your Jared Goff, where you're like, oh, okay, well, I want to replace him, but he's been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's a potential. But I think the signing of Jacoby Brissett kind of signals that they're going quarterback, kind of takes them off.
Right. I agree.
So let's go team by team. Bills are, that's a no. They're set. Dolphins are set. Jets are going with the old conspiracy theorist.
Do they bring him in as a backup? I doubt it.
Patriots, I think now we're off the board. Chiefs, no. Raiders are still there. Broncos are still there.
Yes, you know, they traded away Russell, or they released Russell Wilson, ate all that dead money. They're going to regret that for a while. But yeah, they got an open spot.
Chargers are a no. Ravens are a no. Browns are probably a no. Steelers are now a no. Bengals are a no. Texans are a no. Jags are a no. Colts are a no. Titans are another wild card. And I can't say for certain how they feel about any of their young quarterbacks.
Yeah, like Will Levis. I don't know. It's or kind of
Malik,
a head.
Whatever was his name? Malik, whatever. But I don't know how they feel about them internally.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting one. They're not going back to Ryan Tannehill, that's for sure. Huh.
Yeah, Tannehill is gone. That's a and I just don't know how they feel about their young quarterbacks, because they've got two young quarterbacks, Malik Willis. Malik Willis and Will Levis, and Lord knows what their new, because their new GM didn't draft either one of them, I don't believe.
No.
I think that was the previous regime. So maybe they're looking to make a change. So that's a wild card. So you've got Broncos, Raiders, Titans. Cowboys are set. Eagles are set. Giants are a dark horse wild card.
Yeah, I mean, they're paying Danny Dimes all that money, but Unless they go with DeVito again.
Yeah, they...
Tommy Cutlets.
So they're a wild card. Like a dark horse. Because they want to up the gate over Danny Dimes. They've got to.
Yeah, even with all that money. And I mean, the nice thing, like you alluded to earlier with Justin Fields, is it's not a big financial commitment.
Right.
There are backup quarterbacks making much more than Justin Fields next year.
The Commanders are a dark horse as well, because they could do what I thought the Patriots might do, is trade back, get draft capital, and then trade for Fields as a, you know, as a bridge while they're rebuilding that roster.
Maybe you're right. I personally get that sense that they're going to draft somebody. I feel like they've been in that tweener spot for too long, where it's just like, all right, we're trying this at quarterback, we're trying that at quarterback. It's just been kind of a carousel. I really do think that they want like a solidified guy for the foreseeable future.
I would agree with you. And it's going to depend on how they view these guys, because, you know, honestly, you look at this draft class, and every year they go, oh, this is going to be a historic quarterback draft. This is going to be like the 83 draft. And you're like, no, it's not. I mean, here's, if you're going to bucket it, you're going to have one guy that's pretty good and a couple of guys who you keep waiting them out to see if they turn the corner. And then you're going to have a bunch of scrubs. That's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't know who that guy is that's going to be the best player. So if they start evaluating and they're like, you know what, none of these guys blow us away, and we don't want to trade up, or they go, you know, our top guy, he's going number one, and we're not willing to give up all that draft capital to move up to one, maybe they consider rolling the dice, kicking the can down the road for that quarterback need. And they're like, if Justin Fields stinks, then we'll stink and we'll be up in the high draft next year. So I don't know. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm just saying that it's a dark horse in the realm of possibility.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
49ers, Rams, no. Cardinals, no. Seahawks are another dark horse.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting. New head coach. I mean, obviously, Geno Smith has played well there, but under Pete Carroll. So that's going to be interesting.
Lions, no. Packers, no. Vikings, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Buccaneers, no. Saints, probably no. Falcons, now, no. Panthers, no. So your pool is narrowing down.
Very narrow.
If you're planning to trade him. And, you still have options. There's draft night, because eventually there's going to be a team that goes, you know what? We've gone through free agency. We didn't get, you know, the guy we wanted. We're at draft night, and draft is not looking good like we would want to be able to move up to get a guy, because there's only so many teams that are willing to move up or to trade back to allow you to move up to get a quarterback. And then there's hold him out and wait for an injury. Because what if Aaron Rodgers goes down with another season-ending injury and with the Jets? You know, what if there's a bunch of what ifs?
Sure. I mean, I have this vision of Justin Fields being hogtied in the Hallis Hall janitor's closet until that happens. But yeah, that's not going to fly over well with the lawyers and in the law.
Yeah. So I mean, this is not shaping up to be a clean option for the Bears.
No, now, and the value that they're going to get back is probably going to be pretty low compared to where we were, unless somebody gets really desperate.
Yeah, injuries make people desperate. But, you know, if the plan ends up being they keep Justin Fields, then this is all moot. And maybe this ends up working in the Bears' favor where they go to his agent and say, listen, you see what the market is. People don't want him. We believe in him. Sign this really team-friendly extension, even if it's a bridge extension, like 3 years, $75 million.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I don't know. I have no idea how this is going to play out. This is going to be interesting to see where we go.
For sure.
And I think the one last thing with Bears related is the stadium news.
Yeah, and this is really, really interesting because, as you've all probably heard, the Bears reporting, the people reporting that the Bears are going to be seeking building a new stadium, lakefront, pledging $2 billion for a publicly owned stadium domed on the lakefront and shifting away from Arlington Heights. Now, my initial thought was, yeah, well, Arlington Heights was clearly fumbled. They didn't go through with what we were hoping for. And I do wonder, because as I'm going to echo what other people have said, wait until that first shovel goes into the ground. The fact that this bombshell happened as everybody was waking up on a Monday morning. I mean, I was getting texts about it when I was waking up at 6:30 a.m. today.
Yeah, I there's been so many twists and turns, and you know, with you know, buying the, well, the dance about, are they going to buy this land, and then finally buying the land in Arlington Heights, to the back and forth with about the tax valuation, and then the shift back to Chicago, and then the White Sox coming out of nowhere saying that they want a stadium. And it's been exhausting.
It has. And then you had those rumors of the idea of the White Sox and the Bears doing this kind of joint effort to fund each other's stadiums, which has been a funny little tidbit that we've gotten from reports. I mean, it's been all over the place. And the thing with Arlington Heights is that clearly the Bears did not estimate properly what the taxes were going to be like. And I do think that really there's just a disconnect of how much money that one side is willing to give and how much the other was willing to pledge. Because I do think that Arlington Heights really was excited for the Bears. The citizens might have not liked it with the money being pledged over, but I think that government officials were intrigued by the idea. But, you know, property taxes were just not where the Bears estimated. They were much, much higher. So obviously an alternative was staying in the city. But really, my whole thing with this is, if you're going to build a new stadium, I really just want it to be owned by the Bears, for the Bears to own their own stadium and have the ability to redevelop the area around it. And that's what you were potentially getting with the Arlington Heights thing. If you go back to the lakefront, here's a few questions. I mean, first of all, you're going to pledge $2 billion. Okay, you're pledging a chunk of change. Does that give you some ownership stake in this building? The other questions I have are you going to be able to develop anything around it? Because I can't really see how you can build an entire entertainment district or something like that, like you wanted to build in Arlington Heights in that area. You're really going to have to, at the very least, even if you build in the same-ish area as Soldier Field, you need to improve the transportation infrastructure going there. You just have to. It's not sufficient now. It's a real pain now. It has to be better. And lastly, I'm going to ask this. Where exactly are they going to build it? So are you going to be able to play at Soldier Field, assuming you do go to the lakefront? Are you going to be playing until Soldier Field until the stadium is ready? Like, there's going to be no transition time in between. Like, are you going to tear down Soldier Field, then build this new stadium? Are you going to build this new stadium somewhere else on the lakefront? That's where I would like to know, because if you're going to do that, you're going to need an alternate place to play when you do all that.
I've heard that this is a ploy to as a bargaining chip, and I've heard all these things. I have no idea. I have no idea. I really
I have no idea either.
This,
I don't have any idea.
This is being played very well. And maybe this might just be a counter to the White Sox going, oh yeah, yeah, we want a stadium, and then bringing themselves back into relevance.
Yeah, Kevin Warren, nope, we want a stadium. It's almost like a game of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck.
I have no idea. Until, like you said, until shovels go in the ground, I'm not buying anything. And honestly, I've been saying this for a while. I would like the Bears to be at the 78.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting. Transportation, obviously, they would have to reroute some things, but
you wouldn't. It would have to be an interesting. You would have, because they're building an L stop there.
Yes.
So that would, I mean, it'd be right there. It would be like Wrigley Field right there, which would be nice, because now that walk from the L to Soldier Field in the winter sucks.
Yeah, it really, really does. I mean, especially like, you know, when my dad and I went to some preseason games as a kid, we would park at the Palmer House and walk over. Now, in the summer, that's fine. Late November, December, January, it's not always as fun in Chicago.
Yeah, I think parking is going to be a situation. I think you're going to have to run shuttles.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me. Whether it's the White Sox or the Bears, I think about actually parking there. That's going to be, and it's going to be a challenge.
And I'm going to throw this out there, is if you do put it at the 78, you can utilize the Lakeshore parking, and you could utilize Comiskey parking, because you own that. Like, the city owns that. And I guess if you park at Old Comiskey or New Comiskey, you could take the L right there. Boom, rear there. And then run shuttles from Lakeshore, the Lakeshore current parking lots. Not ideal, but it would make the stadium a lot more walkable. And you would have an L stop right there. Not ideal, but it does give you that neighborhoody feel that most NFL stadiums do not have.
Yeah, and here's my whole thing is, as I alluded to earlier, having that entertainment district and owning your own stadium, that's really mainly where my attraction was to Arlington Heights. Because here's the thing. If you stay in the city, that's not my issue. It's where in the city, what type of land, and owning your stadium. That's really the main points. If you found a plot of land somewhere within the city and you were able to do what you were hoping to do in Arlington Heights, then I'd have no problem with it. It's not the staying in the city part. It's where in the city, the type of land you're going to be on, what you can do around it, and who owns the damn stadium.
The big kicker to me with this news is the Bears would not own the stadium. And that's what threw the red flag for me. It went, either this is not a well thought out plan on the Bears side, or it's a ruse.
Yeah.
And honestly, either could be true, because it would be the most Bears thing ever to have these grandiose plans of this, you know, state of the art facility and a shopping district and hotels and restaurants, and then go, we're going to trade it in for the Park District to own our building again.
Right. Now, you might build a very nice building with a dome, and you might be able to host Super Bowls and Big Ten tournaments and NCAA March Madness and all that fun stuff, concerts all year. Great, but, you know, the Bears won't get that benefit and increase the revenue as much as they could had they owned their own stadium and their own districts.
Yeah, so I have no idea. This has just been a roller coaster of a ride. And it's, if we've all been talking about the roller coaster of who's going to be quarterback for the Bears next year, that's a roller coaster that has a finite ending. You know, we're going to know in a couple of weeks, that situation. Yep. This stadium one could drag on for several years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when did they actually purchase that land in Arlington Heights? It was 2+ years ago?
I mean, when did they start like looking at it and talking about it, or when did they actually finalize the purchase?
When did they finalize the deal? Because remember, that was done before. Didn't they get that done before they hired Kevin Warren?
September 2021.
Okay.
Is when the Bears signed the purchase agreement.
Yes. Matt Nagy was still the head coach of the Bears when they made that deal. Kevin Warren was not here. Ryan Poles was not here.
Yeah. So, it is, I mean, what is the Bears contract with Soldier Field till 2033?
Something like that. And you can get lawyers to finagle your way out of that.
Yeah, you can, but it's, I mean, I think, what did they say? Like 2028 was like the first year they could get out of it. Something like that. But we don't have, they don't have a plan yet, a finalized plan. They don't have budgeting in place. They haven't started construction. And so this is just going to go on for a long time because there's not an urgency yet.
No, there's not. It's not like, oh, hey, your lease is up in 3 years. And the thing is, there's no real rush yet. But having a plan sooner than later is going to benefit you. And the sooner they can get out of Soldier Field, the better. But so, you look at the White Sox situation, they don't have the same amount of time.
When does their lease end?
It's within the 2020s. I know that.
2029. So four less years.
Which is a decent chunk of time when you think about it.
I mean, you're looking at the 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. So you're looking at six seasons, which you're probably figuring it's going to be three to build. Rough, right?
Yeah, probably.
So you've got 3 years to get a deal in place and start construction. The Bears have 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. They have 10 years. And that's probably going to be a 3+ year build. It's bigger.
Yeah, NFL stadium is much bigger, but I mean,
more complicated with a dome. So you're probably looking at 3+ years.
And again, where, if you do this lakefront plan, where are you building it? Like, I want to know, where is the land? Are you talking like on the other side of McCormick Place? Are you talking somewhere down in the lakefront? It can't be on Soldier Field, right?
No.
Because you would need multiple years of playing somewhere else. God, those, George McCaskey would probably just be like, oh, well, let's play 3 years at Champaign. We did it before. We did it that one time.
That was such a dumb thing.
That was so bad. That was so bad. I'm an Illini fan, and I like going to games in Champaign, but Champaign is built for the Fighting Illini, not the NFL. There are a few Big Ten stadiums that I think would be good for the NFL. The Big House, Ohio State, but not Champaign. I say this as a diehard Illini fan. Champaign does not have what it takes to host an NFL team over a season, especially now. I mean, it's one thing back in 2002, but in 2024 and beyond, hell no.
I'm going to throw an idea out there, and it's going to piss a lot of people off.
Oh, no.
What if you trade out land and, you know, Soldier Field, they keep the columns and but you tear the spaceship off of it and kind of revert that back to being public parklands, and you make Northerly Island, where Migs Field was, where the new Soldier Field is.
Would that even fit? Is it really that big?
I mean, it's 119 acres, which is significantly bigger than, I think, the land that they're on now.
There's going to be like some, if that were to happen, it would be like some like Simpsons or like Bugs Bunny thing where the island just breaks off in the middle of the game and the stadium floats away into Lake Michigan.
So Soldier Field is on 7 acres. This is 119.
Okay, I mean, I have to actually, I haven't looked at Migs Field in a while. I have to actually look at the size, but let me look at that for a sec. But I mean, wouldn't that be a logistical nightmare?
Yes.
So then why you didn't even hesitate? Yes.
It's that land is there, but I mean, really, you do have. Like, there's a lot of lakefront land. You know,
I mean, it's long, but it's not very wide. Just looking at the map.
Yeah, it's the problem is what do you do for transportation? I mean, I think no matter what you do, I think Metra and the CTA have to come together to do something. Either whether that be the CTA, I mean, this is an option too, because you've got years. Is what if Metra built, you know, an extension arm, or what if they ran an L back and forth between a Metra stop and the stadium, and it's not a running, they don't run it any other time other than a big events.
The Bears Express.
Yeah, the Bears Express, the Taylor Swift Express.
The Bears Express is a steam engine.
I mean, you could make that cool. Like, what if you the front car, you put a big bear head on it, and you made it a party train. People could drink on it, and it runs from you get off the Metra or the parking lot, and it just runs. And you're like, okay, and you don't have to run it 24/7, 365 like the Blue Line or the Red Line. You run that when there's events there.
You got Ed Obradovich checking tickets. All right, give me your tickets. Let's go. Stop wasting time. Let's go.
I'm just throwing ideas out there, man. I'm throwing ideas.
Well, I mean, right now everything is just an idea, right? There's nothing concrete about any of this.
I mean, it's true. It is true.
Damn it, I said no grills on the train.
Yeah.
Why can't Chicago sports just be fucking normal for once?
I mean, have you ever been to the sports complex in Philadelphia? It sucks. It is just giant parking, sea of parking lots, and then multiple stadiums right there in a sea of parking lots. It doesn't look cool. There's nothing else to do there. It is just a barren wasteland of you drive to the game. It's like, all right, you know how when you go to like the Allstate and it's just like this big parking lot and a building? Just make that like five times bigger. There's nothing else there. There's nothing to walk around. You just drive in and you park and you go to the stupid game. There's no fan experience.
Screw the game. The stupid game. Who goes to the game?
I know, but you go. Have you ever been to Fenway?
No.
So like Fenway is a lot like Wrigley. There's like, it's a vibrant neighborhood and you know, before the game, you got
Yawkey Way.
Yeah, you got Yawkey Way. You go into shops and there's restaurants and there's bars and there's it's like a destination. So it makes it better. You're like, oh, let's go make a whole day of this. Not like, oh, we're going to drive to the game and then we're going to drive right home. Like you're going out, you're going to have fun with your friends, you're meeting up.
Could you imagine the revenue that Philly would have if they had like a complex, like, you know, like a little neighborhood business district around the Eagles stadium?
Just thinking of Philly earlier today, I saw an Instagram reel and it had a guy wearing a Trump MAGA hat. And he's like, I'm walking around Philly. And he's like, none of these, nobody's going to say anything to me wearing my hat. He's like, a bunch of keyboard warriors. And then like 2 seconds later, you hear somebody, nice hat, fatso.
Like, that's the city of brotherly love for you.
Philadelphia for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when they Crisco'd the polls?
Grease the poles.
Yep.
My friend owns a Philadelphia. He lives in suburbs of Philadelphia. He owns a Philadelphia sports merchandising company. And they had one that just said grease the poles.
Yeah.
They had another one that said Big Dick Nick. And then they had one with Jason Kelsey wearing the mummer costume, just said Philly, fucking Philly. But you know, they're a different breed there, man.
Yeah, it is kind of weird to like see pictures of all those stadiums just kind of in one square. Though I've never been heard it referred to as, oh, you just go to the stupid game.
I mean, it's what it is. You're going to the game. That's it. Like you're not doing anything else. You know, like that was part of the cool thing about if the Bears were going to go to Arlington Heights. They were going to put restaurants there and there was hotels right there where like you could go, like, even if you were like fairly local, like, you know what, let's get a hotel for the night, get up, go to the game, or like afterwards, after the game, go back to the hotel and have some dinner and go to the hotel and relax. And you know, it adds a little bit. It just like the stadium being there.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe one day we'll do more than go to the stupid game at the Bears.
What else do you want to talk about? We've talked a lot about the Bears.
Yeah, yeah, we have. Well, there was a lot. Hey, did you see Connor Bedard's near hat trick the other night?
Yeah, I just saw highlights. I didn't watch the game.
Oh, he was so close to the hat trick. He had a dish right, had the goalie down, but the puck was rolling a little bit. The first two goals he scored were sick, and he came so close. Colin Blackwell got it, so good for him. But I've drawn one conclusion. The Blackhawks have a great power play and can score and can win if they just play the Coyotes every night.
That's true.
Because every other game outside those Coyotes wins, which they got their first win on the road the other night for the first time since like November. And then Bedard had that near hat trick at home against the Coyotes. Outside those two games, it has been to watch.
Yeah. They made one minor trade, which not surprising.
Yeah, Beauvillier. Yeah.
So,
nothing else.
Yeah, that's fine. That, I know we had talked about the potential for them bringing players in by taking on contracts, and they did talk about that those options were there, but they just didn't make sense for them. They weren't getting enough of a return for the money they were taking on. And And that, you know, that's I would rather them say no than just take on every bit of crappy cap money.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the other thing you can look at too is it's mid-season and you're going to see a lot more cap casualties in the off-season for that kind of opportunity.
Yeah,
so
I think so.
I think there'll definitely be a chance to do that come this off-season.
Yeah, I think that's probably the more likely place because at the trade deadline, maybe if there's a more robust trade market, people would be more willing to do that. But in the off season, there's a lot of free agents available and players with, you know, the players with that, you know, or teams with that contract that they're saddled with are going to be willing to dump that to be able to bring in new players that are available with without any sort of trade compensation to sign them.
Right.
But to trade, to be a facilitator in a trade, you know, you're, if you're the team bringing on somebody, you've got to pay the piper to dump a player, and you got to pay the piper to bring in a new player. That's a lot of compensation, you know, for a rental. But the Blackhawks do have a new player coming in Landon
Yes.
Slaggart.
Uh-huh. I was excited when I saw that.
Yeah. So, you know, he was a draft pick of the Blackhawks, and he ended up playing his college out at Notre Dame. And, you know, he had the option. He could have waited it out, you know, his time that he was required to be with the Black or property of the Blackhawks and gone to become a free agent, but he decided to sign his entry contract. So he signed to a 2-year deal.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's good for the Blackhawks because he's had a nice year.
Yes, he has.
So I was happy. He was talked about how he'd rather sign with the Blackhawks and that was the right spot for him. So good for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ooh, do you see this Bulls score?
Yeah, this is bad.
Ooh.
Yeah, it is.
They gave
it
up
is.
like 44 points in the first quarter. At
Yeah.
least that road trip was fun, you know, where our coaches are getting choked and the Warriors blow routine layups and we pull games out of our patoots and then we blow a game against the Clippers. This team just cannot be normal.
No. But I mean, the most normal thing about tonight is they're gonna allow Luka Doncic to have a 30-point triple double.
Yeah, well,
I think that's what his seventh of sixth in a row. He's been on a roll. But yeah, they're just getting smoked here.
Yeah.
The Bulls are just a terrible team. And you know, record wise, they're like locked into that ninth spot in the East, but they're just not a good team. And even on this road trip when they did get wins, they had a lot of like good players from the teams that they were playing were in early foul trouble. So they had the luxury of not having those guys play significant minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the epitome of their team and where they've been all year, just up and down. You win a few good games, you lose some bad ones. It's just a never-ending cycle.
Yeah. The one other thing I want to talk about, you know, I'll let you throw anything else out, but the only other thing I want to talk about tonight was Jameson Taillon has back tightness.
Yeah.
And his availability to start the season is in jeopardy. So you had the Blake Snell internet hubbub. Is that him signaling, hey, I'm here, I'm available? Or is there some sort of smoke about with that?
With the Cubs specifically?
Yes.
I don't know. I just, right now, I get the sense the Cubs don't want to spend any more until midseason when they acquire guys. They really don't want to go over that tax threshold. That's the vibe I'm getting. But, I mean, man, Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery still haven't signed.
That's wild. Like, we're in mid-March.
I was going to say, we're less than a week away now from St. Patrick's Day. And they haven't signed. This is wicked.
So I don't know. How confident are you feeling about where the Cubs are and assuming that no other moves are being made?
I feel okay, not great. Frankly, the starting pitching is a source of worry for me because I just don't think it's good enough.
I'm feeling more confident because of the division that they're in. It's not the AL Central bad.
No.
But you've got the Cardinals, who I don't think are going to be that good.
If Sonny Gray is going to be missing some time, because he came out of a game, was hurt. I haven't really read on what the follow-up is, but like the rest of the rotation, Sonny Gray or not, you got an aging Lance Lynn, you have Kyle Gibson. So it's not exactly Cy Young Row up there, down there in St. Louis.
The Brewers have taken a step back.
They have, but I still think they're going to be pesky and annoying. They got.
I don't think they're going to be bottom feeders, but they've taken a step back. The Reds,
they scare me.
The only thing is that they just, being a small market city, everything has to go right for them to win.
And I agree. You're right, and I think they've got flaws, but man, that team can hit.
They can.
If Eli De La Cruz is who he is, that's scary.
They've made themselves better this offseason.
Though Nouvelle Marte getting suspended for PEDs isn't a great start for them, but
that is not.
They have so many young kids, like Edwin Encarnacion Strand, Eli De La Cruz, Spencer Steer, John McClain, they can hit.
Yeah. I think the Pirates at some point will make some rumblings, but they just don't have the horses to hang around.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say, I'd be careful about the Pirates.
Their bullpen
looks awfully good.
I think they're gonna make a run at some point and then just sort of fade out, kind of like the Reds did last year. Well, part of they were not as good as the Reds last year, but where they're gonna make a run at some point and you're gonna be like, oh man, I'm taking notice of this team, and then they're gonna fall back because it went with the Reds and the Pirates, everything has to go right. They just don't have the luxury of being able to go out and spend and bulletproof their lineup. That's the nature of the beast. And the MLB season is long, and you get those nagging injuries. You go through cold spells. And I think that's what's going to keep the Cubs afloat. I think they're better than the Brewers and the Cardinals on paper. And I think the fact that they can go out and get reinforcements at the trade deadline pushes them ahead of the Reds.
I do think the Cubs have a lot going for them. I just think the one thing is the Reds just have more talent. They have more higher end talented guys. I think the Cubs are well built, more fundamentally sound. I think they got a better manager. I think they got better depth. And, you know, they have one of the best farm systems in baseball. You look at so much of what the Cubs have, and it's a lot of good, not great. Now, there's not a lot that's fully guaranteed for the Reds, but the ceiling of some of those guys, like I think Eli De La Cruz is terrifying. McClain, just guys like him, very underrated. And like, look at the Pirates, O'Neill Cruz and Key Brian Hayes, Paul Skeens coming up. Like, you have legitimate stars in the making there. Now, I will say this about the Cubs. He might not be ready for opening day, but Matt Shaw continues to draw my attention. He might be my favorite prospect. Like, you've seen that swing in spring training.
Yes.
The ball explodes off his bat.
He's the reason that you didn't sign Matt Chapman.
I think you're right. Yes.
When I said Matt Chapman would have been nice if you could have got him on a 1-year deal, maybe two. But he's going to block the path, and that's what I see there. And I think the Cubs are playing a little bit of the long game, which is nice in one hand. It would be nice if the Cubs could play the long game and the big market game at the same time.
Well, that's what I want to do with the starting rotation. That's the thing, because people say, oh, well, you know, Ben Brown's coming and Cade Horton's coming. Okay, sure, but I want this rotation to be bulletproofed now. Because yes. If Tyone is hurt, then you look at the rest. Now, I will say, if Wicks is in that rotation, he's impressed me so far. I do think that there's something there. But
I agree.
Again, he's another guy that's relying on off speed and location, which is fine, but the team just doesn't, in my opinion, just doesn't have enough fireballing bat missers. And I think in baseball, you need that. You don't need them all to be like that, but you need more of it. Like, Justin Steele is going to be your number one guy. We know that. But with Tyone gone, okay, Shota Imanaga. I like Shota Imanaga, but I think you're going to have to deal with some growing pains with him. You just are. It's not always going to be pretty. I like the signing. I like him. I think he can do well. But I think there's going to be some rough patches in there. Kyle Hendricks. I will forever love Kyle Hendricks. I think he's a good 4-5 starter at this point, but not much higher. You don't have the room for error with, you know, a soft tossing location, change speeds guy. And the other thing is, you're going to have those games with Kyle Hendricks where he's going to be doing everything right, but the ball just finds grass. Like, we've seen that before where there are games where you're like, he executed, he put it, he got the weak contact. But that slow rolling ground ball just happened to get under the glove or in between the hole in the shortstop or just blooped right into the point in center field where there was nobody there. That's just going to happen when you rely on contact. You're going to have a lot of success when you control the ball like you do with Kyle Hendricks, but there's going to be those games where the Babbitt monster just bites you. What I'm trying to get at here is you don't have enough dominant pitching right now. And dominant pitching is key to winning in 2024.
I would agree with that.
Look at the Brewers. You know, a lot of credit to Craig Counsell for what he's done there, and hopefully he could bring a lot of that here. But one of the reasons that they've been so good, power pitching, stuff, missing bats. I feel the Cubs get too in love with the finesse guys. And I think one of the reasons is because they value the durability. Okay, fine. But you need legitimate aces on your staff. You need guys that are going to go strike out 10+, that blow 98+ smoke by you. You can't be void of that in this day and age. You just can't. That's my big beef with the Cubs. I think the lineup, it's not murderer's row, but I think it could be pretty good. If the veterans play to the back of their baseball card and some of the young guys come up and reach the ceiling that we hope for. You know, if guys like Canario are on the team and they slug home runs, if Shaw comes up down the road and he's slugging doubles into the gap, if Pico Armstrong finds that bat swing again, you know, is stuff like that. So the lineup, I don't think is going to be amazing, but I think could be pretty good. And the defense overall, outside of the corner infield, is going to be pretty good too.
We'll shall see.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, season is coming up quick.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Oh, was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, TryFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go Bears.